Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
I'm Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 437. And tonight, my goodness. Okay. So the plan was we were going to talk about episodes 4, 5, and 6 of Arcane Season 2. And then Beastars Season 3, Episode 1 dropped when we weren't looking. So now we have to talk about that as well.
And didn't they just also drop another Star Trek Lower Decks, so the fifth season?
I want to say they might have actually dropped the final two episodes of the final season.
Wow. So much content.
And because of the whole Zoom thing, we only have, as of right now, about 34 minutes to do it. So we're going to have to go through these a little faster than we'd originally planned.
Well, I think we can sum up a lot of one segment of Arcane by just saying the animation is gorgeous. Anytime there's a fight scene, the animation is gorgeous. Anytime there's a flashback, which in this case, they had one flashback that was done as watercolors and another flashback that was done as colored pencils, it's gorgeous. Victor's underground society that has Art Nouveau stained glass soap bubble aesthetic. It's gorgeous.
So gorgeous. And all of his, like, his people, his priests and all running around and everything, they're wearing all these kind of like accessories. They're not quite clockwork, but there's lots of straps and lots of pieces of metal and everything. I'm like, oh my God, I love all of it.
As soon as I saw the opening gate to his underground society and saw there were little things just randomly hanging from various places, I'm like, I love it. I love all of it.
This is like the entire design of his underground little utopia is exactly what we like. Lots of tents, lots of stained glass windows, lots of things hanging from things.
It's so pretty. Beautiful pops of color. Of pastel color in windows and things like that. Oh, it's all so lovely.
And then we also have the fact that Victor, now what was his assistant's name, the one who was so messily killed by Hextech that one time?
I cannot even remember.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, that's right. His Victor's, who had a crush on him, right? Yeah, I don't know her name, but she is still there with Victor, standing beside him, walking through the astral plane with him, holding conversations. So after the end of episode 6, we're probably going to find out, is she actually there or was she always only a figment of his imagination?
I don't know, but there's so many scenes of them walking in the astral plane as he's trying to do the things that he's doing. And when they're in the astral plane, they're dressed differently, but also their hair becomes like this glowing white cloud around their head. Oh my God, you're going to get so tired of us saying this. It's so pretty.
Now, the other thing that we can sum up quickly is that both Caitlin and Vi have gone off the deep end and hit rock bottom in their own ways. Yes. Caitlin obviously jumped into bed with that very eager new recruit that she was teamed up with in the previous episodes. And she's also teamed up with Ambessa, who's teaching her how to fight and how to be a general, and obviously shaping her to be the kind of ruthless person that Ambessa is. And that's none of it's healthy at all.
Nope.
While Vi is doing bare-knuckle boxing matches, and you have this musical montage of what her life is like, which every day is fight or get beaten up, and then drink herself unconscious, and scream at her friends who are trying to take care of her until they pretty much just throw up their hands and walk away.
Yeah, it is a really interesting state of affairs when we say that the most healthy person out of these series of episodes, Jinx, who is bonding with this little girl who had the hero worship before her, and it's like they're so happy. They're really getting along, and Jinx has completely removed herself from any type of like revolution or leading people or whatever. She's just really, she's in this underground area and she's hanging out with a kid, and it's actually kind of lovely.
It is. And Isha is the name of the little girl that she's been hanging out with. But Savika tries to drag Jinx back into this because she's become a symbol to a lot of people, and the enforcers are coming down and like randomly grabbing up people and interrogating the shit out of them. And Savika, there's going to be a big meeting by the statue to Vander as everyone, all these different factions, tries to come together. There's a great shot of Savika in the rain looking up at the statue of Vander, and she just has this most intense expression on her face because she was one of the people that used to be Vander's supporter until she decided that he wasn't moving fast enough. So all these people are coming together. They're all going to bond. Isha shows up with the blue hair that she talked Jinx into giving her, because she, if Jinx isn't going to become a symbol, then Isha will be a symbol for her. And then the enforcers come in and everybody gets arrested.
Yep. Now Savika manages to get away and she tells Jinx that everybody's been rounded up. And Jinx goes just a little bit crazy at this point because, of course, the kid has been snapped up. And we do see a brief moment of the kid walking with the scientist guy, the doctor, Victor's former friend. Mm-hmm. And he says something like, "Don't worry, little one, we won't be staying very long." And he's deliberately cut his hand and is letting drops of blood fall. And as they fall, that thing that was hanging up in his lab underground starts to twitch and move. And so obviously it's waking up because of what he's doing.
So Savika does manage to convince Jinx to come along on a prison break. And I did like, at one point, Jinx is just so tired of having to listen to Savika that she gives her the finger, not realizing that her middle finger is the one that got shot off by Caitlin. So that, like, the irritated look on her face was like, oh God, this again.
Yeah, yeah. So she ends up kind of like putting Savika, making it look like she's actually hauled in Savika because she's going to be dressed as one of the guards. The guards insult Jinx's pants at one point, which I thought was really hilarious.
It was. It's just like Jinx tries to reveal herself as Jinx to make a distraction, and the guard doesn't believe her and says, "Are you telling me a criminal mastermind would be out wearing those pants?" And Jinx looking around, "What's wrong with my pants?"
But they do end up getting in. They do end up tricking the guards. Now, Ambessa walks by them at one point, and Jinx sees her and hopes that Ambessa doesn't notice. So, long story short, Jinx makes this dramatic entrance into the prison area and opens up all the cages. And everybody walks out and they see her, and she's just trying to be like her usual, like, blowhard and whatever. But everybody's just looking at her really intently, and she gets very quiet. And I love, there's this one moment where one of the people walks up to her and you see Jinx's face, and she just does this like quick flinch. And it's just the detail and the animation in this show, you guys. It was just, oh, it was so nice. But what happens is, there isn't like some type of big, loud, rowdy, yay, our leader and everything. All these people who are in the cages, they walk by her and they just like put their hand on her shoulder for a second and smile at her and everything. And it's just, it's really, really very lovely.
And it's transformational for Jinx too, because she's starting to realize that it's a reality that all these people look up to her and admire her. And now she's helped to break them out of prison. So you can see she's just kind of a little baffled by all that. But it all gets interrupted by the fact that whatever it is that, and I think, hang on a second, we find out later that the doctor's name is Dr. Revick, and it's his creation that comes charging in, and it's this monstrous beast thing with this, like, shimmer thing on top of him that will just inject poison into him to make him charge forward, and he's just horrifying and just sweeps through all of the enforcers in his way. And I think, Jinx tells Savika to take Isha and just run for it. And Isha is fighting her the whole time. But so this thing comes up and it's charging after her, and there's nothing that Jinx can do. She gets knocked down and she thinks she's about to die. And then all of a sudden the thing looks at her and it says, "Powder?" And that's where we end. And I was just like, wait, what just happened there?
Which is funny, because about 30 seconds before it happened, and I don't know what it was that clued me in, but about 30 seconds before that, I was like, oh, it's Vander. It is. It's clearly Vander.
I was like, the powder. I was like, is there some kind of magical connection or something? I had to look at a damn recap to find out. It's like, oh yeah, it's Vander. Whatever Revick did to Vander's body, I guess, or maybe his blood or something, he's made this humongous monster.
Yeah, and there was a moment when Savika had walked outside, and it's just been a massacre outside. Like, when the monster came through, it just tore through everybody. It was awful. So just before we go to the next episode, I just wanted to say real fast, that one little toady who was, you know, getting the shimmer painted on him and everything, Lest was there, and she mentions that he should probably go and seek out this Victor Herald, whatever they're calling him, because he's doing kind of magical sort of things. And it's just, I gotta tell you, that design on Lest is so, so pretty.
He's so good. I really do hope we continue to see more of her, because we didn't see her in any of the next two episodes, I don't think.
Nope. Nope. So it starts, episode 5 starts with Vi hitting rock bottom again. And she's got visions of Caitlin and Jinx as she's punching her way through people. But all that violence is kind of contrasted with these really gentle images of Caitlin lying next to her, or, you know, like Jinx's braid kind of floating by. And then Jinx just shows up, and I was like, oh, whoa, oh, wow, that kind of happened out of nowhere.
Yeah, and Vi almost beats the tar out of her, but she stops, and because Jinx isn't fighting back, and Jinx basically tells her that Vander needs their help, and I somehow, Vi manages to trust her. But they go down into this dungeon area looking for them, and there's all these, like, bubbles, these white bubbles everywhere, and when one of them claps like that, they light up. And I'm like, oh, it's a clap-on bubble. That's great. I love that.
Man, I'm just, once again, it's not just the animation in this show that's so cool. The design is just so neat. I really like it.
And meanwhile, Ambessa has, because Revic didn't leave the dungeon when everybody else got out of the prison break. So Ambessa and Caitlin are interviewing him, interrogating him, and Ambessa starts making her own deal with him about, I guess, she needs whatever power it was to make that thing that tore through all the enforcers. But Caitlin comes in and appears to know what Ambessa was doing. So I don't know if they had worked out beforehand that they were going to sort of do the bad cop, dirty cop routine with Revic, or if Caitlin figured it out and Ambessa's like, yep, what you gonna do about it? So I don't know about that. But yeah, we do find out Revic, yes, has been trying to heal his daughter, but it's not just heal her. I think his daughter has been dead for decades now, and he's trying. He was apparently the creator of Shimmer, and all of this has been trying to defeat death so he can get his daughter back.
Yeah, it's certainly a trope that we've seen before, but it's pretty effective here. Now, while all this is going on, we finally actually see images of Mel, and she's kind of in this otherworldly area, a lot of nightmare images and everything, and someone is talking to her about where they are and calls it a fancy pit they toss their friends into. It's really beautiful, but once again, about 10 seconds before they actually do the reveal of who's talking to her, I called it. I was like, oh, it's her brother who supposedly died, and that's who's been talking to her.
So we think, to start out with. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like there's all this weird drawing and figures and symbols and whatever all over this very rocky pit that they're in. And she's talking with her brother and like, we had a funeral for you. And he had been kidnapped and interrogated. And there's something about the fact that their mother, Ambessa, had an affair with somebody and that there was a baby. And they want to know, did you ever hear anything about that? And she doesn't. But she starts noticing something. She can reach out and touch some of the symbols, and it pushes the block of stone inward and then triggers off this little cascade of blocks changing. So it's a puzzle that she has to figure out in order to get them out of there. So I love the design of this whole puzzle dungeon that they're stuck in, but every now and then, Mel will be talking with her brother, and she turns around, and she, like, tries to inspect something, and then her brother will just be behind her, and you even see Mel do this little start when she turns around. He's unexpectedly closer to her, and that keeps happening, and then you actually see him sort of, like, behind her melding over to one spot, and she's looking up at one point, and he's still asking her questions about their mother and the possible baby and everything, and she's not really hearing him, but there's a moment when she's looking forward towards the viewer, staring upward as he's still talking. And she says at one point, I'm still missing something. I don't know why, but I just love that expression on her face. It was perfect. And it's just something I can't even describe what it is that makes it good. But it's just, once again, zero shortcuts on anything in this cartoon.
Seriously, God.
But what happens is she turns around and she touches her brother's face and says, you're not my brother. And she slams him into the side of the dungeon, and things just start glowing and spiraling out. And she gets wrapped up by these tentacles that she had seen murder her friend, like obliterate her friend when she was being captured. And then this voice says, we had so much hope for your brother. We thought maybe he was the baby, but we were mistaken. And it turns out Mel might be the baby they were talking about Ambessa, that they are so eager to get a hold on. And all these tentacles are strangling her, and then her eyes start glowing, and she screams, and everything explodes. And we don't see her again for the rest of this arc.
Nope, nope. I was waiting to see her in the next episode and not one single peep.
Not one single peep.
Here's the thing that I didn't actually write down. When do we see the return of Jace looking like he has just gone through a freaking war?
I know exactly when it is. It's after the big battle with Vi and Jinx and Isha and the Vander monster. And once you get to that beautiful scene with all of them together, then we go to Jace coming back. That's the final bit of the episode.
Yeah, so Vi and Jinx and the kid, they're in that underground area. I know at one point Vi looks up and sees this mural of a triumphant Jinx. It's a very Art Deco look. It's really very gorgeous. But they start to snipe at each other, and all of the frustrations and the resentments and everything come out. And I had to specifically write down the line where Jinx asks Vi, who's wearing, you know, the big gauntlets, and Jinx says something like, "What about those overdesigned bitch mittens you didn't even build yourself?" And I wrote down, "Ooh."
But they get found by the Vander Beast, and there's this huge battle. Again, gorgeous. I love the strategic moments of slow-mo in each of these fights. You can really linger on how beautiful everything is. But it looks like Vander's getting the upper hand, and Jinx is telling Vi, don't hurt him. And Vi makes the decision to stand with her arms outstretched, not ready to punch. And just as the Vander monster comes up, she says, "Vander, blink." Is this where we get the flashback with Vander and Silco and Jinx and Vi's mother?
I think it might be. I think that might be. Exactly. Apparently, I didn't write that down, but yeah.
Yeah, we don't see Jinx and Vi's father. We just see their mother hanging out in Vander's bar with Vander and Silco together, and they're all really good friends, and she's celebrating something, and it turns out she says, "I got knocked up," and she hasn't told her husband yet, but she's terrified. I mean, just the idea that she has to pick a name for the baby, and this is something that will affect the baby's entire life, and just that kind of responsibility. I'm like, oh my God, I wish some parents had this same thought about what is your child really going to be dealing with if you decide to go with that name.
Oh boy, all those poor people who named their daughters Daenerys.
But yeah, so I mean, she tells them both, you have to take care of the baby. You have to make this whole society of Vaughn work. And they all toast to that, her with something non-alcoholic, because she pushes away the drink that Vander had poured for her. And when she says that she was knocked up, he just reaches out, takes it away, pours something else. It's probably fruit juice, and pushes it back to her. But yeah, before that, when Vi and Jinx were going through the underground, they came across this old office. And there was a note on there, and it was from Vander to Silco apologizing for what he did. He said, "When she died, I kind of lost it." And that's this idea that it was never found, and this could have changed everything about everything that happened to Vander and Vi and Jinx and Silco and all of them. And he never found the apology letter.
Nope. But that was all a flashback, though, because in reality, he and Jinx and Vi are all in the room together.
Yeah. So the whole bit where Vander just comes towards Vi and she's not striking back and she says, "Vander," and then the next thing you know, Jinx is like trying to pick herself up and looking through all the wreckage, and she steps forward and there's Vi and she's embracing Vander and she turns around and says, "What are you waiting for? He's your father too." And I'm like, oh my God, so beautiful.
Oh my goodness, it was gorgeous. And the kid is there too, Aisha.
And the kid is there too, like jumps in and gloms onto all of them to join in the hug. So beautiful.
Sweet. It's so sweet. Okay, so then after that, we see Jace appear looking like he's just been run through the ringer for like a few years at a time.
Yeah, it's like that big room that they were in before they all got zapped out of existence or something. And we don't know how long he's been gone. And that was something I wanted to ask you. They never specify exact dates and times and passage of time. I kind of think they're trying to avoid the nitpickers who want to say, "Oh, well, obviously you've got your timelines wrong." Like, well, we didn't, because we didn't tell you what they were. But yeah,
that is.
Jace has been wherever he was for a long time, because he's like ragged and his clothes are in tatters and he's got a beard and he is deranged now. And he just shows up, and I think it's Sallow is the name of the person that was like getting that paint, whatever tattoo done on his legs. And he's now obviously an acolyte of Victor, because he's standing, he's got that odd metallic sort of highlights or whatever decorations embedded into his skin. He's very calm. It sounds like he's in a cult, but it seems like a very benign one. But Jace isn't hearing it because he says Hextech is evil. We should have never brought it to the city, and it has to be stopped.
Yep. Yep. Oh, God.
And he's not kidding around because he... and also, Sallow is helping Victor communicate with Jace because Victor will just kind of like take over Sallow's body and you'll hear his voice. And then there'll be a little blink or a little surge or spasm or something. And then it'll be Sallow again. And just the expressions and the way he would blink and shudder a little bit and then come back to whatever he was saying beforehand was just really effective. But he says he has to go back to Victor. And Jace says, I can't let you do that. And Sallow says, I'm sorry you feel that way. And he turns around and Jace obliterates him with that big hammer that's now been twisted by whatever Hextech void he's been in this entire time. And on my notes are like, Jace, what are you doing?
Oh, man. Yeah, we're going to discuss that more in the next episode because I have thoughts on that as well. I'm oh, dear. Okay, so episode 6. Oh, God, we're running out of time. It starts with Jace and the assistant floating in space, and they're looking at that singularity that Jace had found. And there's some talk about how it's like, how it's perfect chaos, I suppose. Like, they're looking at it as just something beautiful and wonderful, but I'm sure Jace would be looking at it and thinking, it's evil incarnate! Again, beautiful astral images of them out in space and everything. It's so lovely. Now, after the intro, we have Ambessa, who's tutoring Caitlin in fighting, and something about being strong mentally and bending the environment to your will, and she says she's kin with Caitlin through suffering and sacrifice.
Yes.
So she's definitely trying to, like, bond with her in that way, I suppose.
Yeah, Ambessa was teaching her about the elements, I guess, of being a fighter, and it's like force, but there also has to be guile, and then there has to be sacrifice. So that's the newest one that she's figured out, and I guess that lets Ambessa excuse anything that she does. It's like, if you got to sacrifice, and that means screwing over the people that you're supposed to be loyal to.
Yep. Okay, we go from there, and Vi and Jinx and Isha are taking Vander to Victor, and they got word through all the people who are going to him because that's how a cult spreads. And they talk with that Weasley guy, the one who was one of the first people that Victor healed, and that's when you see him. And I love all the little accoutrements hanging off of his priestly robes and everything. I'm like, oh, God, would love to wear something like that. It looks great. But he looks so young. Like, he looks even younger than before the first time we saw him in, like, the first episode of the first season. You know, he just looks amazing and so peaceful. Now, he says something about the Herald has freed me of my past self, and he manages to convince them that they can't go into the underground area with their weapons. They have to surrender their weapons. And Vi and Jinx agree, and Vi drops her gauntlets on the ground. But you see Isha look back at the glowing bauble on the gauntlets, and then later you see her and she's tucking something into her pockets. So she pulled that little bit of, like, hex tech out of the gauntlets.
Of course she did, yes. So they do meet Victor, and Victor knows that Vander is somewhere in that monster, and he reaches out to touch him and, like, does that whole astral projection thing where he goes inside and then he gets thrown out again. And it's obviously really difficult, but he's going to keep on trying. But they have to make sure that Vander stays locked up in, you know, this one little area, because he could be dangerous if he accidentally gets out and starts a rampage. So there's a lot of back and forth of Vi and Jinx relaxing in this beautiful realm of Victor's, and Victor and his assistant astral projecting into Vander's brain and trying to heal him. Ugh. And Dr. Revic shows up because he and Ambessa and Caitlin have mounted an invasion force into the underground. I'm like, oh my God, this won't end well.
Yeah. Okay, so Revic tells Ambessa that he thinks he knows who the Herald is. Of course he does. It's Victor. And he convinces her to wait while he goes to talk to him. I have a note here that I really look forward to Victor kicking Ambessa's butt, but well, more on that later. But anyway, he goes to talk to Victor, and one of the first things he says is he knows that Victor can feel the decline because Victor's power is apparently diminished every time he uses it.
Mm-hmm. And he's been using it pretty constantly to try to help Vander. But Revic wants to have Vander back because he needs whatever that body has been shaped into in order to continue his research. And Victor isn't going to let him do that because that would destroy Vander in the process. And he tells him to leave.
Yep, yep. He said, I will not sacrifice his humanity for your cause. You may leave. And we saw images when he touches his hand, we see the images of a girl in a coffin. So Victor knows exactly what this is all for. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think at one point he says, you must survive, Victor. And that's almost like exactly what he had said about that poor creature he was keeping in the tube, you know, that it must survive and everything. And that's, he wants things to continue living, but only because that's the only way that he can get what he wants.
Yep. 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 So it's not about the person anymore. It's about his goal, which is entirely about his daughter.
Yeah. Now, Vi sees Rivik and follows him out, but when she goes around a corner, Caitlin is there, and Caitlin throws her to the ground in a move that is exactly the copy of how Ambessa threw her to the ground in the beginning of the episode.
Very nice touch.
That was nicely done. Yes, exactly. So they start talking, and I believe, I don't know, Caitlin says something like, I'm here finding a monster, and Vi, is that when Vi says, I'm here to save my dad?
Yep, yep. That's it.
Yes, yeah.
And then you blink, you're back at Ambessa's tent, and then Caitlin is dragging Vi in with a pillowcase over her head and her arms handcuffed behind her. And she's captured her, and they're going to start the invasion into Victor's realm now. And they're leaving Vi behind, and Ambessa is going to be interrogating her, obviously. And
yes.
Ambessa is really impressed that she managed to get under Caitlin's skin the way that she did. But she can't let her leave because it's too dangerous, and Caitlin does not need more distractions.
Yeah, that, of course, if anybody saw this coming, because of course you did. And that's, of course, when Vi releases herself from her bonds. And I'm like, of course Caitlin didn't turn Vi in. It was all a ruse. And I liked to see Ambessa looking a little bit freaked out about it. She did not see that coming.
Nope, nope. And I think Caitlin gave her some kind of enforcer restraint device thingy that explodes and just covers Ambessa in lines of cords that are shocking her into unconsciousness the entire time. So, yay.
Yeah. Now, in amongst all of that, we did have a brief moment of Jinx talking to Aisha about how things have been so good ever since she came into her life. And I have a note, oh no, this is not going to be good.
Does it feel sometimes like it's a little relentless with this show?
Yeah,
that if you have somebody being really happy or really triumphant, you know it's only a matter of time before everything just goes horrible. And it's not even like everything goes badly. Everything leads to a horrifying tragedy that's going to make it hard for anybody to think happily about their memories from before the tragedy. It's that bad.
Yeah. We have a moment where Jace appears in the underground area, and he definitely freaks out at one point and starts to lose it. And there's this kid that was staring at him. And when Jace gets himself under control, the kid holds out their hand and leads him to Victor. And it's, well, I know this is boring. It's so pretty. It's just so pretty.
But meanwhile, Ambessa's henchman has broken into the underground area to the place where Vander is being kept. And Caitlin had come in, I think, to try to help get him out, and he starts throttling her, and he's furious that she betrayed Ambessa the way she did, and then Jinx shoots him.
Yeah. Okay, so you're going to have to walk me through there because, spoilers, my next line that I have written down there is, yay, Vander saved Jinx!
Because the henchman manages to get up, and he's got some kind of hextech runes on his weapon that he's been using that allows him to fight as fast as Jinx is with her shimmer enhancements. And there's this knockdown, drag-out fight that he almost gets the upper hand on, and then Vander just comes to life and throws him down and beats him into a bloody pulp. I mean, there's no chance of him surviving. And you just see Vander face on and just blood flying everywhere. And he says, don't touch my daughter. And like, he's back. Yay.
Yay. Now, Caitlin sees Jinx. And she's definitely, you can see this look in her face that she's angry. And it's just with everything going on, we kind of forget for a second. It's like, Jinx murdered her mom. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I don't know that there's going to be any reconciliation from this one. I don't think the relationship can come back from that.
But Jinx and Vi and Caitlin are all there, and Vander is conscious again. And there's this beautiful, beautiful moment of all of them together. And just like, oh, everything's gonna be fine.
Yeah, and but, my notes in here. And of course, Jace ruins everything.
Jace ruins everything because he confronts Victor, and Victor isn't telling him what he wants to hear. And Jace murders him, just punches a hole in his chest with that weapon that he's got. And all of the people in the underground area, all the happy little cult members, they just, their eyes roll up in their heads and they start letting out this just supernatural scream, and they collapse to the ground. And all of that work that Victor did for Vander is undone, and it's worse than before. It's like he's got lava pouring out of his mouth. I mean, just burning the ground. Yeah. He is screaming. He's thrashing. He's tearing everybody apart. Nobody can talk to him. He's gone. It's just this thing now, and it's obviously in pain.
Yeah. And through all this, we have this voiceover by Victor, which, I don't know, makes me hope that maybe he's not, like, dead. I don't know, because it could be just, like, flashback voiceover, which is a thing that happens. He's talking about why the commune failed, because basically humanity.
You know, it's just, pretty much.
It was always gonna. And Bessa is there, and now she's leading the charge into the utopia. Not that they're having to do too much, because everybody's just collapsing horribly all over the place. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of all that, in the midst of Vander going crazy, and Vander is absolutely going to murder, I mean, he's going to take out Vi and Caitlin and Jinx easily. And the kid, you see this knowledge come over the kid's face, and she reaches into her pocket, and she's got the little bit of hex tech, the little bauble and everything, and she's running towards Vander and remembering all the moments of happiness that she had with Jinx and the music, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so pretty, but it's just beyond tragic.
Beyond tragic, because Jinx sees what she's about to do, and she tries to run forward, and Vi has to grab her and drag her backward, and Isha just, like, loads the little hex tech into Jinx's gun that she managed to recover, and she slides right underneath where Vander is, and she points the gun upwards, and you see her look at Jinx and give that little, you know, finger shot thing that Jinx would always do with her, and then she fires, and it explodes like a nuclear bomb level explodes. And that's the end of the episode.
It's the end of the episode. Oh, God. It was really good. It was really good. But I was just like,
good.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it's like you said, it's kind of relentless, but it's like, oh, that's just a beautiful tragedy.
Just perfect.
Ugh, it's just, oh, God. Okay, so we ended up going on way longer than I thought we were going to, but we really do, before we end the episode, we have to talk about the first episode of the third and final season of Beastars, which we actually did watch.
Yes, we did watch. And I've been so jonesing for Beastars content that I've been going in and reading the manga at Barnes & Noble. So I have seen some of these characters, and I am so looking forward to seeing how they do them in the actual cartoon, because in the manga, it's all very elegant and everything like that, but every other person's design has been so elevated in the animation that it's just, because you even saw Legoshi's grandfather's arm as he's talking on the phone with somebody, and he's got scales and they are iridescent and glistening, and it's just like, oh, this is already just like, they have so elevated that design already. Oh. And we haven't even seen the rest of the design, so yeah, this is going to be great.
So looking forward to it. Long story short, Legoshi's talking to the panda guy and talking about basically, you know, like he's got like a mark on his record because of the devouring of the, Rui's leg and everything. But, you know, it's basically like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever. I got a mark in there. And the panda's like, well, you understand that with a mark of devouring against you, you will never be able to marry Haru. That just won't happen. And I'm like, that actually does make sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. It makes sense. It also sucks. And we have this, I mean, this wonderful anime level emotional reaction from Legoshi, like a full body convulsion flying into the air, screaming Haru's names. And Panda Guy's like, oh, to be young again.
Oh, dear. So we go to the school. There's an announcement about how this year, yep, the school's going to be segregated between the carnivores and the non-carnivores. And they also mention about who was highly placed in academics this year. And apparently that usually goes to dogs. And it does seem to be including Lugosi's friend Jack. And yeah. his friends are all cheering him on. And that's when we get the call from Lugosi's grandfather, because Lugosi dropped out and didn't tell any of his family that he was going to do that.
Yeah. Was he expelled? I get the idea he was actually expelled for that because of the devouring incident of there's no way they would actually let him stay around the other college students.
Because Jack definitely says dropped out, but he, of course, could be covering for him. So I don't
know. He could be. Could be. And we don't know if Jack knows all the details about the devouring, what happened.
Right. Right.
But with everything that's happening with the segregation, I really like what they've done with this storyline, because it's all, we've got to keep the carnivores and, you know, the non-carnivores separate to keep everybody safe. But what you see is that it allows the carnivores and the herbivores to be shittier to each other, because they're no longer in amongst each other having to avoid hurting anybody's feelings or being awful. So the carnivores are openly discussing going to the black market and getting to eat meat and, oh, what was it? Oh, I think it was a pig, actually. And just like stuff they would have never said around the herbivores. And meanwhile, the herbivores are talking about, oh, well, thank goodness, because it smells better in here already. Carnivores are just awful. And you saw the same thing at an outdoor cafe with Winharu, and I guess it's her siblings, and there's a carnivore that comes in, and their people at the other table are like, ugh, things have really gone downhill. The smell is just awful, and they walk away. And you could see the carnivores actually like, because he can hear them. It was deliberate. So I did, oh, yeah. I like that. The idea that segregation may have made things temporarily safer, but it's also making the relationship between the species worse.
Yeah. It's the whole thing that the school was actually started for, I think, was to bring everybody together. It was a, you know, a non-segregated school, and now it's all ruined. And interesting that the reason why the carnivore came and joined them at the table is he's dating one of the herbivores. So Haru is like, on the one hand, those other two bitches were being really shitty about there being a carnivore around. But I wonder if this is going to make things easier for Haru, because now there's somebody else who's dating a carnivore. Mm-hmm. Or is it going to go badly? And even though Lugosi would never hurt her, everyone's going to be like, oh, you saw what happened to that one. So I don't know what's going to happen at this point.
There is a lot in the manga that talks about interspecies relationships and how that is really hard, and also how society, at least the Beastar Society, rewards couples that marry within their own species. There's like monetary benefits to doing something like that to preserve the races. I'm like, oh God. But then at the same time, they're also saying how mixed species children have a hard time of it as well. And I'm like, I don't think they're pushing an agenda here. I think they're trying to make sure everybody understands the difficulties.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. I guess I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, I'm reading this going, oh, I don't know. This is starting to feel a little problematic to me. I don't like, because when people talk about, oh, well, you know, they shouldn't mix with other races because the children will just get bullied. And I'm just like, how about we make sure that people don't bully other people? Wouldn't
that
work better?
I was just going to say, I think we're addressing the problem at the wrong end, to be honest.
We really are, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so it jumps to that one herbivore who we had seen last season selling his fingers, you know, and he's sort of talking to himself about how Meat Appreciation Day has just turned into a day where the various, like, carnivore groups, the really highly placed carnivore groups, are all settling scores with each other, including the Shishigumi, who used to be very popular, but their star is not as high anymore. I'm sure it's because their former leader is dead, and then Rui left the organization, so they're struggling a bit right now. Interesting, we did have a little bit of the A-team and the C-team animation going on. Like, obviously the animation is always absolutely beautiful, but at the moment when they're talking about the various different carnivore groups being at each other's throats, and you've got that one herbivore talking everything, it was not like the really super elaborate animation. It was much simplified, but yeah. I hadn't noticed that before, but that was definitely going on there.
Yeah, but his little soliloquy gets interrupted by somebody coming up behind him and murdering him, so just out of freaking nowhere.
Yep. Okay, so there is a moment I had written down when an herbivore had tried to complain to Lugosi, and I didn't write down what that complaint was about. That was when I noticed that there was some really good animation going on, but I didn't write what the conversation was about. I don't know why.
Well, Lugosi is in a housing complex, whatever, and he's having nightmares every single night
that's
because...
it.
he's had meat for the first time, and now everything that he tried to subdue in the previous season is coming to the front, and he's just thrashing around and screaming. And his poor alpaca next door neighbor is just, she can't stand this. She tried to talk to him at one point, and he just flinched out of the room because he's figuring he's dangerous to herbivores now. Well, she goes to his room in the middle of the night to make a complaint because she can't sleep with all this going on, and he drags her into the room and throws her down. And that's where we end that particular scene. We do not see what happened after that.
No, it did not look good, but I'm going to bet that he manages to like stop himself at the last second.
We hopefully. Can hope. Yes.
Hope. Yeah. Okay, so the Shishigumi are trying to get concessions from the rats that make the super drug, and the rats are not giving them the time of day at all. Now, the rats are asking for, like, I believe a price of ivory, and someone walks in the room and throws down a horn, and the rats are like super, super, super excited about it. They think it's great. But then this whatever person came in actually kills one of the rats, and the Shishigumi immediately go into action and everything. And it says something like, you know, calls them stupid cat and everything, and tells them to call him boss. And we still don't see exactly who it is, though. They have a long tail, and there had been a scene where the tail was, like, brushing carrots at one point. I guess maybe grinding carrot juice.
I think those are two different characters. I think
the
character that was, like, whose tail was brushing along these carrots or whatever and drinking carrot juice, that is the Beastar. That is what they said they are of this world. And they're very interested in Lugosi because the charges were dropped because his friends all vouched for him and said that it was a consensual devouring what happened there. But he doesn't buy it, and he's going to make sure that this gets taken care of. So the person that comes in and takes over the Shishigumi is somebody else who's very touchy, because that one rat that he murdered just said some offhand insulting comment, and he just, like, slaughters him and then throws one of the lions down on the ground and puts a knife to his throat, and that's how he manages to get control. So this the leadership in the Shishigumi has been a bit in flux for a few seasons now.
I think so. I'd say poor guys and everything, but I don't know. I mean, like, they were pretty cool last season, but they weren't particularly nice in the previous season.
No, they weren't.
Yeah.
But we can hope that most of the really not nice ones were slaughtered by the panda and Lugosi as they were trying to rescue Haru.
Yeah. Now, we did have a brief moment where Rui was talking to his father, and I guess his father, well, asking you about his leg, and he has a fake leg on, and it seems to be working very well, but his father's trying to tell him what to do again.
Yeah, and just telling him, you know, his improvisation was entertaining for a while, but now he's going to have to follow the script, and he's going to be the leader of the Horns conglomerate, so now he's got to toe the line, he's got to go back to school, got to be a good, upstanding citizen. Don't know what Rui thinks about all that, but I don't know.
Yeah. So we did not see Juno in any of these episodes.
No, we
do
not.
I don't know what's going on with her. I think we saw all the other major characters, though. I think we did catch up with everybody.
I don't know that we saw any of the other members of the theater group.
I think we saw brief visions of them in the big community meeting that they were having, where they were mentioning about segregation and everything. And of course, we saw Jack and all of his friends in the room. They were congratulating him. I think some of them are drama club kids.
But. And it was an interesting statement they made, basically, with the announcement of the awards, where somebody says, "Oh, I bet it goes to all dogs again this year." And you see the lights, you know, picking out the different winners, and then you pull back from the audience, and you've got the carnivores on one side, and the herbivores on the other side, and it's really obvious that all of the lights are over on the carnivore side. So you don't know, what does that mean? Are the herbivores not being treated fairly, that they don't get the accolades or the chance to succeed academically? We don't know.
We have no idea. And it was something they were expecting. They were saying, "Oh, I guess they're going to go all to dogs again."
So and that's because it wasn't specifically like wolves or jackals or something like that. It was all domesticated dogs. So it might be saying something for the powerful that also toe the line.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be.
I don't know. But that's where we end it. We end it right with that scene with the taking over the Shishigumi. So I'm very interested to see what happens next. Okay, so we are going to wrap it up there. I will say really quickly that, no, I haven't watched any more of Star Trek Lower Decks or caught up on any of the other things I'm supposed to catch up, because while I was supposed to be doing that, I started watching Blue Eye Samurai, because why not? Why shouldn't I get into something else? But we won't talk about that now. We'll talk about it in another episode.
Good, good.
So that is going to wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. I would go into detail about that, but this episode has gone on really long. So I will say all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So I think maybe next episode we might actually be in the same time zone.
I think we might be, yes. And by the time this episode drops, this will be the last episode before Christmas. So I hope everybody's gotten their Christmas shopping done. I have, mostly.
Me too. For the most part, yes. But or happy whatever else you are celebrating. And hopefully you are all safe and happy. And we thank you for listening to our podcast.
Yes.
And I guess that will probably wrap us up. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
I always watch out. I can't help but cry. I'm gonna go pout. And I'm telling you why. Santa Claus ain't coming to Mars. Santa Claus ain't coming to Mars. Santa Claus. Santa Claus. Santa Claus. Santa Claus ain't coming. Santa Claus ain't coming to Mars. We're not on his list. We don't even have ice. What's it matter who's naughty or nice? We work on hydroponics, live in a biosphere, keep the generator fueled, just so we don't die out here. So why don't you watch out? I need a good cry. Sorry to shout, but I am telling you why. Santa Claus ain't coming to Mars. No, Santa Claus ain't coming to Mars.
What's that sound? What's that sound?
We have less than a minute, so we're going to have to start a new one. So, yeah.
Okay. Do you want to start one?
Yeah, I'll try. So if I have any problems, I'll let you know.
Okay. Keep recording.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.